Before we start our episode today, this is just a reminder. History Hack does have a Patreon account and all of your donations are gratefully appreciated. There's lots of perks on there, secret groups on Facebook. Do get involved. We would love to see more of you. Enjoy the episode today. Hello and welcome to another installment of History Hack. I am very smug today. I am smug because I have this guest all to myself. And I know Beth and Lockie are going to be spitting blood when they hear this episode. But I did invite them and they both had to work. So, because I have with me the incomparable Richard Van Emden. Richard, how are you doing?
I'm very well. I'm very chilled. I've just been away on holiday and I'm back now and I'm revving up to start my new book.
The new book?
Well, the new one is another one of those series I've been doing about using soldiers' own photographs.
Okay.
Private images in the Great War, and so it's another volume. Perhaps I shouldn't say exactly what it is because as I'm just about to start.
No, you don't want anyone sweeping in and starting.
But it's another volume of those using the private photographs. So
wonderful. But we are here today to talk about the fact that, and you've been doing this for a while because I remember talking to you last time about it when you came on with Victoria Wallace ages ago now. In the land of History Hack, and you were giving your boy soldiers book a right good going over, weren't you?
Yes. I mean, it's been a passion of mine of all the subjects of the Great War. I suppose the boy soldiers is the one I feel that I somehow own. It's a story which, when 20 years ago, when I suddenly kind of started walking along the graves, going, hang on, he's 16 and he's 15, I thought, there's a story here. And because no one had written anything about it, I kind of feel that that given this 20-year odyssey I've been on, I kind of slightly own the subject. But it's endlessly fascinating. And I've just updated, done a massive and final update. I'm not going there again. I'm so knackered with it. The results are there, hopefully.
Well, the result, I have it. It's massive. It's like trebled in size. I love it.
Yeah, well, it's not quite trebly, but it's probably gone up about 30%, which it does seem a hefty tome, but it's at about 464 as opposed to 3, whatever it was before, 330, 340. So, yeah, a lot of new material and photographs as well.
If I know you, you are as bad as we are on History Hack. You will have gone down every rabbit hole and obsessed it to death in the course of doing this update, wouldn't you?
Oh yeah. I have sat there for literally years. We might be watching the Bake Off or Strictly or whatever, and I'm literally plowing through like Ancestry records.
Yeah.
Watching the, I cannot. If there's a rabbit hole to go down, I cannot not go. I have to do it.
Have to see it through.
Yeah, and it generates. I mean, every now and again, you just go, "Oh my God, look what I've just found! Phenomenal." And very often, actually, with a lot of the research, it was you'd get a hint of something, but it was only through massive research that you could then tease out another 20 or 30 stories, all saying the same thing. And you could go, that's a theme. That's a new part of the story, which if you just saw one person mention it, you go, well, that may just be that one person. But well, by the time you've done all that research and you glean all this new material, you can go, okay, that's a totally new story I've never thought about.
Why do you think people, because it's not just you, I mean, I know you, I mean, if any other First World War author went to their agent and publisher and went, I want to write about boy soldiers, the response would be, don't be stupid, that's what Richard Van Emden does. We know you love it, but why are people obsessed with boy soldiers?
Oh, it's the innocence, isn't it? It's the sense of all these lads, you know, I mean, I've got this unique list at the back of the book now of 70 lads, all under the age of 15, serving at Gallipoli or on the Western Front, 3 of them 13. And it's the sense of these young lads just desperate for a bit of adventure, something new. You know, every girl loves a lad in uniform and all these sort of stories that we've kind of grown up with. And I think it's just that sort of sense of, well, you know, these boys had no idea. Frankly, none of them really knew what they were going to get into. It didn't matter what age, but that these boys went abroad to serve their country, to fight for their country. And the stresses and strains put on them were just so extraordinary. And I mean, you know, you could write a book about the overage soldiers. You know, I've often wondered about doing that, but it just doesn't have the cachet of, you know, talking about here's a lad, he's 14 years old and he's at Gallipoli and how he dealt with, you know, part of the issue is, of course, you know, a young lad doesn't have the physical wherewithal to stand trench life. You know, he doesn't have the fat and the stamina and the just the physical strength to carry out what he's expected to do. And so many of them broke down, and it's tragic. It's so sad. You know, lads who frankly took something away from the army rather than gave something to the army because they physically couldn't handle the stresses and strains of, say, a winter campaign at Gallipoli. Then again, that winter campaign at Gallipoli, who could stand it? But, you know, a lot of these lads broke down, and frankly, they shouldn't have been there when they're that young.
It's unsurprising, really, that like people take them to their hearts. But I just want to say, tell you about a conversation I had in Belgium this weekend. Beth and I were with a Great War Group member, with a guide, and we were talking about, you know, when you go to some of these boy soldier graves and they're literally buried under teddy bears and toys and things like that. And we thought, yuck, no. Yeah. Like, we decided on a consensus where, think about how that 15-year-old boy would want to be remembered. He fought as a man. He pretended to be a man, and he died doing a man's job. And what would he think if he could see his grave covered in teddy bears? And we decided that actually it was probably not the right thing to do.
Absolutely. I even mentioned that in my introduction, the new introduction I say about Private, you know, Valentine Strudwick and the teddy bears outside his grave.
That's exactly who we were talking about as well.
Yeah, and he's not the youngest, of course, but he's obviously the most famous. And yeah, I mean, I say it sticks in the craw of many that these teddy bears appear. I never knew Valentine Strudwick, you know, and I have no idea how he felt about it. But my guess is, like yours, that he would have been slightly embarrassed by the whole thing. And he would have said, well, I served as a soldier. I just happened to die as a soldier. And, you know, so, yeah, I think they should be. I mean, you know, I still say in the introduction, look, it's no more tragic a 15-year-old lad dying than a 32-year-old man dying who's got four kids under the age of 10. You know, yeah. I mean, that's just as tragic. It's simply different. It's just a different form of tragedy. But a lot of these lads, you know, I spoke to them. I met people like Dick Trafford and stuff. And a lot of them said, look, I'm glad I went. You know, I had the most amazing experience. It gave me so much. It took a lot too. But I'm not going to say I was this little lamb led to the slaughter. What I would argue is that when you get down to 13 and 14, you really are dealing with lads who invariably will break down. They can't deal with that sort of physical stress, let alone mental stress. You know, by the time you get to 17 and 18, well, a lot of them perform better than older men. You know, older men who were suffering from all sorts of industrial injuries or from sciatica or, you know, whatever you like. You know, a lot of these lads perform better than those who are older. But once you get under 16, you really are on the whole dealing with lads who will break down and will have to be shipped back. And I did a lot of statistical work on this, and relatively few who were under 16 survived very long on the Western Front. They were either pulled out because mum and dad kind of worked out they were there, they've got to get them home, or a lot of them, especially in the winter of 15, 16, when thousands were shipped over. You know, they'd enlisted in the summer months of 1915, school holidays, what are we going to do? Come on, let's go and enlist. Well, unfortunately for them, that was normally a, you know, 3-4 month training period. They're at Gallipoli or they're on the Western Front, and a lot of them just simply couldn't hack it. And they came home, and frankly, it probably cost the army a lot to have them out there in terms of the training and the food and everything else, and then they've got to send them home. So it's a different type of tragedy. As I say, it's no different from the man who dies age 30 with four young kids. You know, it's the same sort of tragedy, but it just has that different flavour.
You just reminded me of my favourite Richard Van Emden story, if people didn't hear you tell it last time, which was that you are the king of the war bores. That's what we've been calling ourselves.
Because the war bores.
Yeah, the war bores. We've got T-shirts and everything. But did you not used to go around old people's homes knocking on the doors and asking if there was anyone there who'd served in the war?
Yeah, absolutely. I used to go out to a place like Whitney Bay and Colour Coats in the northeast, and I learned very quickly. He said, have you got a man? Because at that time they could be 90 and have served in the war. And I used to say, you know, have you got any Great War veterans here? And they'd go, no. But if you said, have you got any here aged 90 or above? Very often, oh, yeah, we've got a couple of those. And they just associated, they didn't know they'd served in the war. So you had to quickly change and go, I'm after anyone aged 90 plus. And you know, 9 times out of 10, they served. So yeah, I hunted them. I remember a friend of mine saying he was on a bus. He was saying that sat next to a man called Robbie Burns, who was banging on about Haig, and he just came and said, he says he's the only Robbie Burns in Whitby Bay. Now that isn't the Robbie Burns everyone knows, who's in the Cameron Highlanders lived in Wokingham. It's another Robbie Burns. And I literally went, knocked on his door. His wife opened the door. I said, "Is there somebody called Robbie Burns here, served in the Duke of Wellington's?" She went, "Yes." She said, "I'm out shopping, so you'll find him in the back. You know, just wander through the house. You'll find him in the back." And she left me to get on with it. He was lovely. He was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Was that, you know, Butte de Warlencourt, that attack there on the right at the back end of the Somme, and was at Arras. And, terrific. But that's how, yeah, I used to go and just hunt them out and loved every minute of it. Absolutely, you know, never regret it. My only regrets were when I wasn't quick enough to respond to a veteran saying, "Come and see me," and then they died in the meantime. And I have several of those. But I rang one and said, "Oh, I spoke to this lady." I said, "Your husband served in the war." She said, "Yes, dear, but he died today."
Oh, God.
Morning. And I was like, "Oh, I'm terribly sorry." So yeah, those are the ones I regret. I should, you know, wish I'd met them earlier, clearly.
So let's talk about these boy soldiers.
Yeah.
Explain the original book to us. What was the scope in the original?
Okay, so the originally, I mean, I had no one had written about this. I mean, I went away going, okay, what books do I need to give me a kind of outline of the boy soldiers? Like, nothing. Nothing was out there at all. So it was literally generating the story. So I had no idea where I'd go with this. I mean, originally I thought, okay, I've met some boy soldiers. You know, I've got some material. I've got their memories of what it was like to serve in France, blah, 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 blah. But what I didn't realise, for example, was there's a whole political angle. So a man called Sir Arthur Markham, a Liberal MP, fought the government for a year to get particularly the very youngest back from France and to stop them going overseas in the first place. And Hansard was full of it. So all of a sudden, so the original thing was, okay, I've not only got the stories of the lads themselves and what it was like for them to enlist and go overseas, and I can find more material in books, but I've also got this incredible political angle. So, you know, I was able to kind of flip between one and the other. And that then I thought, okay, this is a book. This has the potential not just to be a kind of, you know, boy fest of stories of the Great War and how they enlisted underage, but also to bring out, to highlight the fact that there were pressures and pulls in Parliament to get these good boys back. And so there was just way more material than I originally envisaged. So that was the original book. So that was, okay, I can now write a, you know, 300 books sensibly about something which no one's ever studied before.
And then I was going to say, like, the next question is, why did it need updating? It answers itself, because after that, you were Mr. Boy Soldier. And I'm guessing you've had everyone come at you with more stuff since that book came out.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, I'm just very grateful. Somebody says, "Oh, my Uncle Fred served and he was 16 or 17 in the Great War. Are you interested?" And you sort of, well, I am interested. I'm always interested. But in a sense, that doesn't add anything to the story. What I was after was new material, particularly on the very, very youngest, you know, on lads who were 13. And I have to say, I have three of those. But of course, the very, very youngest, Sidney Lewis, no one knew who he was. So when I updated the book in 2012, so originally it came out 2006, I think, updated 2012, I still had Private S. Lewis was in the Mirror newspaper, served on the Western Front, enlisted at 12, served on the Western Front at 13, but still nobody knew who he was. So when I did the updated version of Boy Soldiers and got publicity for it, it was meant to go in the Daily Mail and got pulled at the last minute. So we put it in the direction of the Sunday People. And that was the most, it was fate. It was absolute fate, because we got a double page spread in the Sunday People, and who should read the Sunday People but son of Private S. Lewis?
No.
And he contacted me and just said, "That's my dad, Colin Lewis." He said, "That's my dad. I've got all the paperwork to prove it." Had it gone in the mail, we would never have found out who Private S. Lewis is. And of course, there's the plaque on the house that he left from now. There's the blue plaque outside saying he's the youngest known soldier of the Great War. And of course, but that material alone needed to go into the book, because suddenly I could piece him together. He wasn't in the East Surreys, as it said in the news, but he was. He joined the East Surreys, but he transferred to the Machine Gun Corps. So we'd never, ever, S. Lewis, you know, East Surrey Regiment, we'd never have found him. All of a sudden, Machine Gun Corps, okay, there he is. That proves he was out there. And I was able to piece it together from there. So that alone justified a kind of update, that we had the very youngest and we could write a short chapter on him. But then there's lots of additional information, as I said, by looking at various new strands. So I've spent the last God knows how many years, you know, looking at ancestry, going through, systematically going through every. So what I do is put in age, born 1896, enlisted 1915 as a shortcut to find boys who are basically lying about being underage. So in 1915, you got vast volumes. So I put in that date in 1896, it throws them all at that. I went through every regiment, the British Army, through all the records went of those that had those parameters, 19 and enlisted 1915. And I looked at every single record. And all of a sudden, out came, say, 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds by the bucket load. But you know, lads who said they were 19 but turned out to be 14. So, but what it threw out was new stories. So, for example, the silver war badge that was issued to men who are discharged normally through wounds or sickness, this was restricted. This was not given to boys who had lied about their age, you know, enlisted, a misstatement as to age, as it was euphemistically called, and they're kicked out of the army. And they're saying to the British Army, look, for God's sake, you know, I've served at Gallipoli for 5 months, can I have an SWP? And they're saying, no, you can't. And it's only by seeing large numbers of them that you build a picture of all these lads kicked back into civilian society, desperate not to be pilloried and spat at and shouted at and called a shirker, by having an SWB, but it's refused. It's totally, they're being punished. Time and again, they ask, pleading for these medals and they get these badges and they're told, no, you're not eligible. Why aren't they eligible? They should have been eligible, for God's sake. The other thing which I discovered was the issue of punishing them when they're released. They had to pay for their own way home. So there are parents saying, my son's been brought back from France. Why is he still in the army? They'll say, you have to pay, he has to earn enough money to pay for his own fare home. Now, that's fine if you're training in Aldershot and you live in, I don't know, Reading. But if you're training in Aldershot and you're from Dundee, then how long is it going to take for you to get home? You've got to, all the separation allowances are cut anyway. You've got to sit there until you raise that money to go back. And in one instance, I've got this mother gets her son back from France. She begs for him to be released. She doesn't know why. They say, well, he's got to earn enough money to pay for his own rail fare home. And he literally arrives, and that night he dies. And I thought, what the hell's happened to him? What, is he throwing himself under a bus or something? So I pulled his death certificate. He died of meningitis. So he walks in the door at 5 o'clock on a Tuesday evening, and he's dead by 1 in the morning. And that is just so, so sad. And had he been released, of course, when he originally came back to the UK, he would have survived. And so there are lots of these stories, and you pull them together, and all of a sudden that makes a new chapter, you know. And it's called Patriotism Is Not Enough, which is, of course, the famous quote from Nurse Cavell. But it wasn't enough, you know. These boys were punished in many ways for their temerity to enlist, and yet they were encouraged to enlist in the first place. That's the irony of it.
It's bonkers, isn't it? I mean, and you've mentioned ancestry, and obviously that the fact that they keep adding to this, the fact that the burnt records have gone on there, the Silver War badges, the medal index rolls and that, which means you don't have to spend years sitting at queue. You can do it in front of, like you say, Bake Off. It's made it easier. Are there any big, was there another new avenue that you could go down source-wise that didn't exist the first time round?
No, I mean, the update has basically relied on massively on ancestry in terms of not only producing this unique list of the youngest soldiers to serve overseas, and I say they have to be under, not just overseas, but in a theatre of war, they have to be under 15 to make the list. There is a list of the youngest officers, I think 7 or 8 of them are 16 commissioned officers in France, age 16. So that allowed me to do that list. The looking at the records in terms of the medical records, say, brought out all sorts of news stories about punishing these lads, or the fact that so many of them broke down in that second winter of the war, 1415. So I got new material from books that I discovered written by underage lads. I got new material from people saying, oh, for example, the Black Watch. Somebody said, have you ever seen the war diary of the Black Watch for December 1914? I said, no. They said, well, if you're checking that, there's a draft of 191 boys who reach the fifth Black Watch and 59 of them are found to be underage. They do a kind of assessment of the battalion and go, well, how many lads have we got underage? It turns out 228 of that battalion in December, the 30th of December 1914, are underage. 228. So it's, you know, new material that people have given me. But in terms of like the volume of new stories I've got, including new stories of individuals, have all come from Ancestry. And it's been the most fantastic resource. But to access that, I have had to spend years and years sitting there plowing through systematically, record after record after record. But also the other thing that I say, that's the other thing I have used in a new way, is the Commonwealth War Graves records.
Yeah.
But originally my stats were basically based on saying, well, you know, how many lads, and this was before you could access the Commonwealth War Graves records in terms of saying, okay, right, put in their age and how many come up as being 17, how many come up as being 18. Originally, when I did the research, I literally went AA, AB, AC to ZZ.
I've been there doing that, to do a comprehensive list of Lusitania victims and stuff as well. It's like the ultimate nerd way to get what you want.
Yeah, and that probably took 2 years to go through. They don't allow you to do that, buddy. That search mechanism is you can't use it. And then all of a sudden you could just put in 17 and bingo, here come all the 17-year-olds. But what it meant was I could do a kind of, yeah, I could do a head count. And I could sort of look at various other things and go, okay, well, I think it's about 250,000. What I did this time, and what the Commonwealth War Graves really became so useful, I thought, hang on a minute. Anyone who went overseas in 1914, 1915, it's on the medal roll saying, okay, they landed on the 15th of June, 1915. Yeah. Okay.
So for people that don't know, that's if they served in those 2 years, they get a separate medal, which is the 14 or the 14-15 star. And on those medal rolls, unlike the other medal rolls, it tells you the date they set foot in a theatre of war.
Yeah, exactly. So after the 1st of January, 1916, you can't identify, in most cases, or the vast majority of cases, when they set foot in France. So that's a problem. So I could never go, well, okay, how many lads aged, you know, 19 who died in 1916 had actually been overseas since 1914? I thought, well, why don't I do that? Why don't I look at, you know, go, okay, I'm going to look at 21-year-olds who were killed in 1918. How many of them are there? Right, there are 10,000, let's say. How many of those 10,000 have actually got the 14-15 star? How many of them have got the 14 star? And that blew my mind. The numbers just rocketed because I'd never looked at it like that. Again, it takes a huge amount of research. So you can look at, you know, 19-year-olds in 1916. You can look at 19 and 20-year-olds in 1917. You can look at 19, 20, 21-year-olds in 1918. And if they've got a 14-15 star, they have to be overseas, aged, you know, 17 or under. You can even do it for 22-year-olds. I've got 22-year-olds died in the last kind of 100 days who are out in 1914, aged 18 or 17. So, you know, it that then blew the figures, just went, wow. And now I'm up to, and I basically, in the first editions, I said, okay, I'm going to take the lads who were killed in 1918 as aged 18. I'm going to include them. But of course, for 6 months, end of March to August, they were allowed to survey overseas aged 18 and 6 months. So I could tell if it's been an 18 and 3 month old and an 18 and 8 month old. So I said, well, we'll kind of include them because there's lots of exclusions as well. This time I've left them out completely. I've not even looked at 1918 in terms of saying statistical evidence for 18-year-olds. I'm just going to ignore them completely. Because what I can do is look at 19-year-olds in 1916, 20 and 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds in 1917, 18. And as a proportion of the numbers who were killed aged that, you know, what proportion are actually serving overseas earlier on? And that has just rocketed the figures to 400,000. 400,000. Now, that includes a percentage who enlisted and never served overseas. So that's including that. But in terms of numbers who served overseas, I originally said 250,000 served in the British Army and 65% didn't serve overseas. I've now actually looked at that and that's changed. It's 65% did serve overseas. And of that 400,000, about 250,000 do go abroad. And that is a conservative figure. I've got a list at one point of 10 exclusions where I say, I haven't bothered including these. I haven't bothered including these. Because I can't say absolutely 100% in every case that is, he is underage, so I'm going to leave all them out. So even with exclusions, I'm up to 400,000.
It's nuts. You know, Frank Lampard's granddad is in there, a great granddad is in there as a 15-year-old. But he lives in, yeah, he enlists. And he literally gets as far as Winchester and they send him home again. So he must have really looked 15 because it literally has a line through the page. It just says underage. So he like obviously turned up and someone went, what idiot took this kid's signature? Seriously? And yeah, just sent him off again.
Well, there is one kid. I've got one kid in the book who I discovered. He's 13. And, I'm getting that confused. I've got one little, he's 13. They said would make a really good soldier. So let's take him anyway. And there's another one who's 15, who comes from a school. I can't think of the name of the school, but it's the school for the mentally deficient or something it's called. And even they, even when he's brought home, even when he's sent home, there's records just going, he doesn't even know when he arrived in France. He's not a clear idea of who he is and what he's doing there. I mean, you just go, how did he get overseas? It's just nuts. Now, yeah, he's an exception to the rule, but there were some great, great stories of individuals who you just go, hang on a minute, he's 4'10", he's got a 28-inch chest. How on earth did he get
won't that? Sleep without the light on.
But the thing is I don't blame recruitment sergeants, because if they thought that these boys would never go overseas, a lot of them say, well, I enlisted them, not because I thought they would fight for their country, because I thought they needed a square meal and the army would get them out of a coal mine, give them fresh air for 6 months, they'll, you know, good three good meals a day, and then they can leave the army and go back to work. So a lot of them, it wasn't the question of just going, I'm going to get a quick shilling, although, of course, that's what a lot of them did do. But it was also to go, look, this will do them the world of good, and they'll never see action anyway. And a lot of parents allowed their kids to go with that perception too.
Can we go off down a rabbit hole that isn't on the list of questions?
Sure.
You mentioned finding new themes, like finding enough strands that look the same to be able to say there's a pattern here. Tell us about one or two of those.
Well, as I say, the major ones are the patterns that are the punishment. So the Civil War badge was the new pattern that emerged, even though you go, well, and in fact, one thing I didn't put in the book, and I slightly regretted afterwards, is I did wonder, there are so many kids going, please, please give me an SWB. And I did find a number who shouldn't have got it, who did get it. And I did begin to wonder, which again would affect my statistics in an upward pattern, was that there were, I did wonder whether people discharged boys, not because they were they were mistaken as to age and they'd been sent home at age 16, but being unfit, or gave them any other characteristic which would allow them then to get the SWB. So if you're discharged as being mistaken, you ain't going to get it. If you discharge them for any other reason, such as wounds or just general unfitness, you will get it. And I did wonder whether that was something, I couldn't prove it, but I did wonder whether, in fact, a lot of the boys that I missed, that I would miss, because I didn't see discharge misstatement as to age, were sent home, given the SWB, because they were discharged for other reasons. And that is a possible additional, you know, upward move, would push my figures even higher. And as I said, the other thing, which the other main theme that came out was forcing them to pay for their train fare home, and the stresses that put on parents. So a lot of parents were threatened with, you know, basically told you need to pay to get him home. It wasn't legal. They could say you have to pay for your son to get home. There's a lot of pressure put on parents to pay up, and a lot of them say, I simply cannot afford to do it. And one lady, there's one really good letter from a lady who says, who you could read it one of two ways, but it sounds like she's being threatened to say, unless you pay for him to come home, unless you pay for him to come home quickly, we may rescind revoke the policy of not sending him overseas. In other words, pay up or your son may find he goes abroad. You could read it in one of two ways, and it's slightly opaque. Maybe it was deliberately opaque, but you felt the pressure on parents saying, look, all allowances have been cut off. I need him either home earning money so that we can all live. But the one thing I can't do is I can't afford to live without him allotting me a shilling a week or two shillings a week from his wages to keep me going. And now all of a sudden that's cut off. And all you're doing is putting that money in the piggy bank so he can then pay for his train fare home. And of course, it was entirely unfair, because if the army, one lady goes, you took him from, you know, you took him from Aberdeen to Aldershot. I didn't ask you to. So you bloody well bring him back again. You know, you
it's a fair point, isn't it?
Yeah. Whereas there's a guy, a lad who's literally training in somewhere like Lowestoft, and he lives in Ipswich or something, and it's going to take him. You know, the train fare is going to it's all of you know whatever miles. It's short distance. It's going to cost him probably a couple of days' money to get him home. Whereas you know these trains that again, if you've got to go into Glasgow and then go out to Aberdeen and then up the coast a bit, that could cost you. You could be there for a couple of months.
Yeah,
you know. So that was a huge theme that came out, and of course the theme of young lads who, of course, you think about Kitchener's Army all enlist in 1914. Now the great enlistment is 1915, but yeah. What you realise, of course, is loads of kids are just pumped out to battalions that are shorter men and in very very quick time. So a lot of them. I mean, I've got lads going out to France at the age 15 with 8 weeks training, 6 weeks training. It's not typical, but there is enough of them to make you go, blimmin' heck. And if they join up in August, when it's nice and hot, then they're going to find themselves out there in, you know, on Gallipoli in that great storm in whenever, November 15 or on the Somme. You realise that actually a lot of these lads are going to break down. So again, that was a theme, again, just from letters from parents. Letters saying, I even got a letter saying, I'm happy for my son to go out underage, but could you make it the spring when it's a bit warmer, you know, and you'll be able to handle the conditions better? Please don't send him out in November. So there's a lot of that. So those, again, those strands came together to produce a new chapter, which wasn't there before.
Brilliantly. So we've talks, haven't we? So you can employ rules to your statistical analysis and you can be mindful of how they could be skewed by certain things, but it really isn't easy to be accurate with these cases to 100%, is it? I mean, they're fundamental. These stories are built on lies, these kids lying about their age. How difficult is it to tease out the accuracy? I take it you're comparing it all to birth, death and marriage records as well, to be able to find when they're registered as being born, or maybe parish records as well.
Yeah, but no, I mean, it's actually really straightforward. If they're discharged, misstatement as to age, it usually has their date of birth on the record. So yeah. The reason why they've been discharged is the parent have to send in a birth certificate. The date is registered on there, which is how I've got these 70 lads under 15, because it says, you know, born 1902, 1901. So the lads themselves might have lied. It might have been very difficult for the army at times to sift who is really a 17-year-old or 19-year-old and who is lying and he's a 16-year-old. But in terms of dealing with that evidence now, it's actually relatively straightforward because, you know, in the cases where I simply couldn't, you know, for whatever reason, the date of birth was missed off the records, I just then applied for a birth certificate, which is a bit expensive.
Yes, like a tenner a go.
You know, needs must. And I thought, I'm not going to miss this boy off simply because I'm not going to pay 25 quid. So it's for the youngest ones, I made a policy of making sure that each one absolutely verified and there's no issue with, you know, have I got him right or wrong? No. They're in because I've got him right. There's a lot of 14-year-olds are not in the book, in the records, in my records, simply because I cannot prove 100% that they were out there aged 14. This guy, even when I posted the first tweet about it, somebody said Private Elks, who is killed in 1917, age 15, he was out there age 14. I said, well, I couldn't prove that. I couldn't. And he sent me a newspaper article saying, a contemporary newspaper article saying this boy had been out under fire before his 15th birthday. I thought, oh, well, I never saw that. But yeah. I tried to prove that he was 14 when he went overseas. I couldn't. So he's out the records. There's somebody else to send me in another old contemptible who was 14. So they're still coming in the numbers.
This is the thing. It's never going to be over, Richard.
No. But it is for me because actually it doesn't add anything to the story. I've proven that a lot of kids out there age 14, certainly, and even some age 13, I don't need to put additional proof in. I've done my stats. I've got three chapters about stats. Written in a way that is not dull, I hasten to add, but trying to say this is how I worked out the figures, and I've given myself a 15% margin as well, saying you know it can't be 100% accurate, but even when you give yourself that margin, the numbers are just incredible, and so I'm really happy with the final results, and you know, so far, for nothing to make me go, oh, no, another update is necessary. Unless, of course, somebody goes, this is my granddad and he's 12 and a half and he's on the Western Front. You know, it ain't going to happen.
Yeah. I'm interested in the silver war badge thing. So for those that don't know, a silver war badge is a badge you get when you get like invalided out of the army, or you're no longer fit to continue, and you can wear it around, and it basically says to people, bugger off, I've served, I'm wounded, don't give me any shit for not being in the army. That they wouldn't give those to boys who had been overseas and had served with distinction and then got sent home because they were lying about their age. And yet my rabbit hole at the moment is self-inflicted wounds. And I got no evidence that anyone is denied more than one or two, but that's because they have other disciplinary infractions. None of them are denied their Silver War badge, even if their wound is self-inflicted.
Yeah, I've got one in the book where he's a bundle of trouble. He gets into all sorts of, he eventually takes his own finger off. He then goes back to England. He then does a bunk, goes back into the army, does a bunk again. I mean, he's just all sort of, he's just, you know, the army can't stand him. He actually does get his SWB, despite the fact in the end he is discharged as underage. But he's originally, he's sent home because he shot his finger off.
Yeah.
I did find one or two really interesting cases where, you know, just it's an administrative error, presumably, where kids who were discharged as underage still got the SWB just through an oversight.
Yeah.
Or something going, oh, stuff it, you know, I'll give him one anyway. I don't know whether that would happen. But on the whole, it was a pretty hard and fast rule. And if you were discharged as underage, you just didn't get it, no matter how long you'd served in France. And some of them, it's, you know, this. I mean, there's one guy called Herrick Vega or something, and he loses, you know, he's underage. He loses his toes through he's out there in the great storm of 1915, loses his toes, loses his foot or what, his feet to frostbite. He's in a terrible state. And he then, of course, is discharged as you know, not underage, but because of wounds, he gets his SWB. But another boy who goes through exactly the same storm is there in Gallipoli for probably a couple of months longer, doesn't get it simply because he doesn't, in the end, get discharged as for injuries or for wounds or anything else. And he just says, look, I'm 15, I've been out there for this length of time. No, you're not getting one. So it was,
isn't it? That storm is the one where trenches are just being washed away. It's like flash flooding. And they're all wearing summer clothes, aren't they?
Yeah. It just came out of nowhere. And one of the worst storms in living memory, if, you know, at that time. And it killed a lot of men, whether they were, you know, 15 or 50. But these lads just so many of them couldn't after that. I mean, who could stand that kind of weather in thin clothing? It was impossible.
Yeah.
There's some great stories, and there's some new additional stories where it's just really moving in a funny sort of way. There's one lad who joins the IRA. He's in the Connaught Rangers. He's on Gallipoli, age 16. And it's a really amazing story because he goes back, he gets discharged about 6 weeks before the Easter Uprising. And he's obviously radicalised by everything that goes on then. And in 1921, he's involved in an ambush on some policemen, and he himself gets killed. And he's buried by the IRA, and he's dug up, and it's proven that he's, you know, that this is the lad, and blah, blah, blah. And you just go, this boy's life has just been violence. You know, from the moment he kept him, he's never escaped the aggression, the fighting, the anger, you know, for good or ill. And he's gone through and he's fought the British, who he'd fought for. And then he ends up in this 1 foot grave in a cemetery with a little plaque on his chest saying, this is this lad, and he is a member of the IRA, blah, blah, blah. And he's been killed in action. But you go back and there he is at Gallipoli with the Connaught Rangers. And so there's some really kind of moving stories. And we just think, well, violence has been their life and it was their death.
I was going to ask you, I think you may have just answered one of the next questions, which of the new additions moved you the most?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of new additions, but in a sense, that one, simply because, you know, at least for so many of them, they were able to build new lives and go back to civilian life and create something for themselves and have a family. And you just felt with this lad, you know, I neither approve nor disapprove of what he was doing. It was just the sadness of the violence of which he just lived from 1915 to 1921. And that, you know, so that is from the age of 16 through to his death. So that, in a sense, it was just particularly poignant. I found a couple of new ones. I found, if you accept, and, you know, it's up to the individual, whether Condon, you know, Private Condon, John Condon, the youngest to have died. Well, there's very strong evidence that perhaps he isn't as young as people think he is. So who's the next one? Well, Aubrey Hudson, serving with the Royal Fusiliers. He's killed aged 15 and 28 days. He's already been wounded aged 14. He's been out for several months. So he now is the next one on the list in terms of who is the youngest. And then I've got another and a photograph of him as well, called James Thomas, who is 15 and 31 days. And he's killed within a couple of weeks of arriving in France, and both of them on the Thiepval Memorial. So all of a sudden now, I'm going to go to the Thiepval Memorial again, which I haven't been to a couple of years. It'll be amazing to see both their names on that memorial. But they are possibly now the new first and second youngest killed, known killed. I'm absolutely convinced that somebody somewhere was killed age 14. I just haven't found him.
Yeah.
But I've got enough 14-year-olds who are wounded and have just been really lucky to survive. I mean, one of them's wounded at Flares, age 14, on the 15th September 16. You know, they could, so that bit of shrapnel could have so easily gone 2 inches to the left and killed them, and they would then be a 14-year-old. So I'm sure there were 14.
Yeah, there must be one somewhere that has slipped through your net. I mean, the idea that every single one of them would have survived is...
And not just one, probably more than one. Because, you know, there are a raft of kids who enlisted using false names, and they are lost to history. We don't know who they are. You know, the army didn't know who they were. They were killed, and they were killed using a false name. So, you know, I'm sure there's a 14-year-old amongst them. As I say, we just simply haven't. I did find one who was 14, but there was so much confusion over some neighbours who appeared to be of exactly the same name. In the end, I thought, I just can't prove that. And so I left that one. But I think it's some, you know, births and deaths and family relationships and things that had all kind of got mixed up in these couple of houses that neighbored each other. And I got a feeling that actually this 14-year-old is probably older, but it looks like he's 14. But as I say, so he's the only one I found that possibly had a question mark against him. But the youngest that I can absolutely 100% prove is, say, 15 and 28 days.
Mad. Just what was I doing at 15 and 28 days? You mentioned Sydney, but of the ones from the original book, which one has undergone the most change?
Well, Sydney. I mean, the rest of them I was able to flesh out. I mean, you know, Jack Pouchot, who I always thought was amazing, you know, the 15-year-old Distinguished Conduct Medal winner. You know, I had his story, and his story went in, and I didn't need to expand on it or reduce it. So it's not that any individual has had a sort of renaissance, and I found loads more material. There are one or two that I just happened to find a few more additional details, which I thought actually that would be useful to put in. But essentially, it's new characters, new individuals, and they only go in because they add something to the story. There's no point in just adding another, you know, dozen 17-year-olds or another dozen 16-year-olds simply because they happen to be there. They've got to add something to the overall thesis. So there are new people like that. But in terms of a character who does appear in the previous edition, who is now fully fleshed out and he's changed, Sydney is the one. But everybody, there's the lad who impersonated, and he's not really a soldier, who impersonated his brother and went to France aged 14. So his brother came back on leave, said, "I'm not going back again," took his uniform off and scarpered. And his 14-year-old brother put the uniform on, got to France, arrived at the battalion on the eve of the March offensive, and then runs around with the battalion for 2 weeks because he can't get rid of him. And I found a photograph of him and his brother. And they do look remarkably similar, because at the time I thought, oh, they would know instantly. And I'm sure they did know instantly, but you know, they do look physically quite similar. But so there's a little more with him because there's a photograph. And I've got additional photographs. I mean, I haven't spoken about those, but I've got, you know, because I buy privately taken photographs. So I've got a picture of George Moore, VC, the VC from Gallipoli, the boy officer from Gallipoli who won his VC at 18. Well, I've got a picture of him on the Somme in 1916. You know, never before published photograph that happened to be in an album I bought. And he, of course, died about a week before the end of the war.
Yeah.
One or two other officers as well who were 17 years old in the trenches having been promoted from the ranks. So there's lots of new images as well, which wasn't in the original update. I didn't add any new picture section, but this time over those years, I've got more material, new photographs. including a 40. I got him off. Again, sometimes you think these things are meant to happen. There was a lad whose his medals came up on eBay. On the saleroom.com. And he's 14 years old, 14 and 71 days. So I think he's my sixth youngest. And I forgot all about the sale. And I couldn't believe it. And I didn't. And I went on thinking, oh, God, who's bought them? And they hadn't been sold. And they appeared on eBay about a month later. And I bought them. And there's a photograph of him, you know, in his story. And it says he's a very plucky lad on his discharge papers. And it says he's 14 and 71 days. So somehow, you know, I was absolutely dead sure I'd missed them and they'd been sold. But no, lo and behold, they turned up again. This time on eBay, and I was able to buy them, and his story's in there too.
That's mad. Richard, thank you. This has been amazing as ever. Your enthusiasm for this. I love that you got it done. I love it. It's brilliant. Thanks. It arrived, and I was like, look how big it is.
Yeah, but it's not a coffee table style book, so it's still one you can just about pack in your bag if you're going on a holiday or anything else.
You absolutely should, because it's brilliant. It will be available on the Great War Group. Well, it is available on the Great War Group bookshop, but it's also available on the History Hack bookshop, which is why we're here. This has been brilliant. Thank you, Richard. Everybody go buy the book. It's amazing.
Thank you, Alex.
When our guests join us to talk about their work and their new book, the 45 minutes or so they spend with us is just a taster of all their efforts. So to this end, we have launched our very own bookshop on bookshop.org, where you can find our guests' latest and greatest books. You can support them, and you can support History Hack too. 10% of every sale via our bookshop supports the podcast and allows us to keep at it and bring you more amazing guests. You can find our bookshop at bookshop.org/shop/History Hack, or just search on bookshop.org for us under the shops bit. Thank you for your continued support, and here's to your next great book.